The text that was read this morning fits perfectly with the phrase the song we just sang, "My Jesus Knows Just What I Need." And indeed, He does know what we need. He is a great high priest who does know about us, knows about how we work, how we think, how we feel. He knows everything about us, and He certainly knows what we need. The challenge for us is learning to trust. You know, you think you understand someone, and then they do something you weren't expecting. So you can ask the question, just how well do you understand people? How well do you know them? Do you ever really know someone? People think in funny ways. They think in strange ways. I don't mean funny as in ha-ha. I mean funny like, huh? It's just amazing the thought processes that some folks have. The unusual viewpoints, the strange ways of looking at things. Let me illustrate. Here's a touching story about how men think. Okay? So men, see if you don't agree with this. How men think. Here's the scene. You've got an old man lying in a hospital bed. Lying in the hospital. His wife is standing close beside him. The old man looks up at his wife and he whispers, eyes full of tears, "You know what? You've been with me all through the bad times. When I got fired, you were there to support me. When my business failed, you were there. When I got food poisoning, you were by my side. When we lost the house, you stayed right there with me. When my health started failing, you were still at my side. You know what, Matilda?" "What, dear?" she gently asks, smiling. Her heart is filling with warmth as she's listening to him. He says, "I'm beginning to think you're bad luck." Tom said amen because Marge isn't here to slap him. Well, there's no telling what somebody's going to say or do. And it's kind of hard to really trust people, isn't it? Especially once you've been burned a time or two. But how can we make it unless we learn to trust someone? Someone. Isaiah 7:14, "Therefore the Lord Himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel." Isaiah 9:6-7, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder, and his name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. Upon the throne of David and over his kingdom, to order it and establish it with judgment and justice from that time forward, even forever, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this." Luke 1:30-31, "Then the angel said to her, 'Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you shall conceive in your womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus.'" John 1:14, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." People talk about the birth of Jesus, and they should. They should. Do you remember last Sunday me telling you about this sign on at a church building that I saw up on the northern part of the Limestone County? About the sign that said Jesus was born so man could be born again? Well, you know, on the surface that sounds right and it sounds good and it sounds wonderful. And thank God Jesus was born. But His birth didn't save us. It was His death that saved us. It wasn't in His birth that He shed His blood. It was in His birth that He came to the earth. But it was in His death that He saved us. He gave us the opportunity for salvation. But why was Jesus born? And why was He a small child who had to learn to walk, who had to learn how to feed Himself? Why was Jesus an adolescent, a teenager, going through those difficult years and on into young adulthood? Why did He do that? And why did Jesus live for 33 years before finally dying on the cross? Why did he do that? Why wait so long? Why not just come as a man and die the same day and be done with it? Why not do that? So he could experience for himself all the common struggles of mankind. That's why he did it. Sorrow, natural growth, hunger and thirst, sleep and loss of sleep, poverty, a physical body with all of its weaknesses and its frailty. So he could relate to what we go through in life. He was tempted in every way like us. He sympathizes with us, knowing what we face, knowing what we go through, so we could know that he understands. That's why Jesus did it. He did it for us, for our benefit. But brothers and sisters, Jesus did not do this for himself. I want you to get this clear in your mind. He did not do this. Jesus did not need to experience life as a learning experience. He did not have to suffer physical pain to understand our pain. He did not have to go through the process of getting sick when he was a baby, of having to learn how to feed himself, of having to learn how to walk. He didn't do all that for himself, for his benefit, so he could say, hey, I know how a baby feels. He didn't go through young adulthood and the angst of puberty. He didn't do that for his own benefit. He did that for our benefit. He did not live on this earth 33 years for his benefit so he could say, oh, I see what they go through now. That's insulting to God. He already knew what we go through. He understands better than we do how we feel. He did not do this for his learning experience so he could say, okay, now I get it. Now I know what these people are going through. That's not it at all. He did it for us, for our benefit. You see, Jesus is all-knowing, omniscient. He is all-present and all-powerful, but he is also all-knowing. In John 2, verses 23 through 25, now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover during the feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs which he did. But Jesus did not commit himself to them because he knew all men. And he had no need that anyone should testify of man, for he knew what was in man. He knew what was in man. Jesus did this to help us trust him. He has been through what we go through. That's true. He has faced temptation. He has endured the fiery trial of faith while he was tempted of Satan during that 40 days he was hungering in the wilderness. He has been there and done that. He has endured human suffering, physical pain, betrayal by a friend, loneliness, helplessness, helplessness, sinfulness, guilt, and separation from God. He has endured every bit of that. He understands, certainly he does, but he went through all of that for our sake so that we would know, so that we would know we have a God who understands, so that we would know and we could trust him. You're wondering, why did I tell that silly story at the beginning? It's hard to trust people. But you can trust God. You can trust Jesus. He's been there, done that. He's seen it. He's endured what you endure. He's gone through the physical problems of life on this earth. And so as Hebrews 2, 14 through 18 says, inasmuch then as the children have partaken of the flesh and blood, he himself likewise shared in the same, that through death he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is, the devil, and release those who, through fear of death, were all their lifetime subject to bondage. To release those, I should say, to release us. For indeed, he does not give aid to angels, but he does give aid to the seed of Abraham. Therefore, in all things, he had to be made like his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself has suffered, being tempted, he is able to aid those who are tempted. Jesus understands, you can be assured of that. He understood before he ever came. But we're so limited. What's heaven going to be like? Faye and I were talking about that this morning. I mean, I don't think that we're just going to stand around before the throne of God and sing Amazing Grace for eternity. I don't think we're going to do that. I just don't believe it's going to be like that. But I don't know what we'll be doing, because there is no night there. There is no darkness. There is no death. There is no end of time. Time has gone away. Now we exist with God forever without end. That's the beauty of going to heaven. And folks, let me just tell you something. It's worth whatever price you have to pay to get there. It's worth whatever you have to give up in this world. It's worth whatever you have to endure in this life. If you have to go through 100 years of physical pain to make it to heaven, it'll be worth it, because you'll never have to leave. But what are we going to do there? We don't have a clue. But let me tell you something about God. Do you find that there are places in this world that you'd like to travel to and visit? Do you have a bucket list? Do you? Of things you'd like to do. If you don't know what a bucket list is, folks, you need to get out more. A bucket list is basically a list of things you want to do before you kick the bucket. That's what it means. Now, I remember the last words my Uncle Joe said before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Hey, boy, how far you think I can kick this bucket?" Y'all didn't get that, did you? The bucket list is a list of things you'd like to do. If it's skydiving, but if it's going to see some of the sights of this world, go on an African safari, go to the pyramids of Egypt, you want to go and down into a mine somewhere and see where diamonds are. You just have a bucket list of things you want to do in this life. You know what? You could really have a big bucket list of things to do. You know who made all this stuff? You know who made this world we live in? You know who made all the wonders of this world? God did. And he put all of it here. Don't you figure he's got something amazing waiting for us in heaven? Something beyond our ability to comprehend. It'll be worth it. Whatever we end up doing up there, it will be glorious. It will be fun. It will be wonderful. We're going to have more fun than we've ever had in this whole life. That's what we have to look forward to in heaven. It'll be worth it. So Jesus came to this earth to help us get to heaven, to give us a chance to go. And you know, he taught us some very valuable lessons, some amazing lessons. John 13:1-6. We're going to talk about this next Sunday in Sunday school, but I want to bring it out to this morning. In John 13, now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. And supper being ended, the devil, having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, remember that, rose from supper and laid aside his garments and took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. Do you know why Jesus could do this? And do you know why so many people couldn't do it? I don't know about you. I don't know if you could do it. By the way, do you know that Jesus washed Judas's feet? Did you know that? He washed Judas's feet. He knew Judas was going to betray him, and he still washed his feet. Could you do that? Could you wash the feet of somebody you knew was trying to bring about your destruction? Could you do that? Could you? Do you know why Jesus was able to do it? Somebody says, well, because he's God. Okay, that's true. Why was he able to do it? The Bible tells us right here in John 13, because he knew the Father had given all things into his hands. He knew that he had come from God, and he knew he was going back to God. That's how he was able to do it. You know, we need to remember that. Where did you come from, and where are you going? If you remember who you are and whose you are, you can do anything that the Lord wants you to do. You can humble yourself and do even the dirtiest job. Jesus was able to do that, and he taught us a very valuable life lesson. A part of being a Christian is a willingness to serve even those who don't deserve it. Even those who don't deserve it. My Jesus knows just what I need. He knows that I need to be humble. He knows that I need to have the heart of a child and to humble myself before God and before my fellow man. I need to be humble. But he also knows another very important lesson that he taught to Thomas. And you know the story of Thomas. Following his death, his burial, his resurrection, Jesus came to the apostles. Thomas was not there. And Thomas announced when he came back, and they said, the Lord was here. And Thomas says, I don't believe it. Thomas announced his philosophy, in effect, seeing is believing. Unless I see with my eyes, I will not believe. Unless I touch with my hand, I will not believe. I will not believe unless I see. And so Jesus comes back after 8 days in John 20, 26 through 29. The disciples again are in the house. Thomas is with them this time. And Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst and said, peace to you. He just appeared before them. And he said to Thomas, reach your finger here and look at my hands and reach your hand here and put it into my side. Do not be unbelieving, but believing. And Thomas answered and said to him, my Lord and my God. And Jesus told Thomas a new philosophy, a new way to look at life, a better way to look at life. When he said, Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Jesus taught a new view of life. Believing is seeing. See, Thomas's view was seeing is believing. But the Christian view, believing is seeing. Okay? And that's what Jesus is trying to get us to see. Why was Jesus born? To die. Yes, but more. He was born and he lived as a man, so we could follow him. Because our Jesus knows what we need. He knows how to get us home. He knows how to get us to safety. He knows how to get us to the light. He knows how to get us to that place where we can live with God forever. He knows what it's going to take to get us there. We need to follow him. We need someone to follow. And God gave us his son to follow him home. There was once a man who did not believe in God, and he did not hesitate to let others know that that whole religious stuff and religious holidays like Christmas, bunch of foolishness, bunch of ridiculous stuff. And his wife, though, did believe, and she was raising her children to have faith in God, to believe in the death of Jesus on the cross, the sacrificial death. And in spite of her husband's constant complaints about wasting time and energy on faith, she would take those children to church. So one snowy Christmas Eve, his wife was taking the children to a Christmas Eve service in the farm community in which they lived. And she asked him to come, but he refused. I'm not going. That story is nonsense. Why would a God lower himself to come to earth as a man? That's just ridiculous. So she and the children left, and he stayed home. The winds grew stronger, and the snow that was falling turned into a blizzard. You couldn't see anything outside. So he says, well, I'll just though he's worried about his family, he's hoping they get home safe, but he sits down in front of the fire to enjoy a wintry afternoon, late afternoon. And then he heard a loud thump on the side of the house. Something was wrong. Something had hit the window. What's going on here? And then another thump. And he looked out, but he couldn't see anything. In a little while, the snow let up a bit, and he ventured outside to see just what had happened. What's going on out there? And in the field near his house, he saw a flock of wild geese. A whole flock of them. Apparently, they'd been flying south for the winter, and they got caught in this blizzard, and they couldn't see which way to go, so they flew down to the ground, and now they're stranded on his farm. They got no food, no shelter. They're just flapping their wings, flying around in low circles around his field, blindly, aimlessly. And a couple of them had even flown into the side of the house. The man felt sorry for the geese, and he wanted to help them. And the barn would be a great place for them to wait out the storm. And then they would be warm. They would be safe. He could put food out for them. They'd be okay. They could survive this night of the storm and wait it out and be able to go on the next day. So he went over to his barn and he opened both doors wide, lit a lantern in the barn, put out some food, and he watched and he waited, hoping the geese would notice and go into the barn, right? But they didn't notice. They just fluttered around outside, looking around, flying around, and didn't seem to notice the barn or what it could mean for them. The man tried to get their attention, but everything he did just seemed to scare them. He moved, and he went into the house, came out with some bread, broke it up, and kind of made a bread trail to the barn. They didn't get it. They ate the bread, but they didn't go into the barn. They didn't catch on. So he was getting mad. He's getting frustrated. Why is this? They won't follow me. He got behind them. He tried to shoo them. They just scattered. They just scattered and went every which way. And so he's beside himself. He doesn't understand why they will not go to the barn. Nothing he does works. And he says, why won't they follow me? Can't they see I'm trying to help them? Can't they see that I'm trying to save them? That barn is the only place they're going to survive this storm. Why can't they understand? And then he thought for a moment and he realized, they're just not going to follow a human being. If only I were a goose, then I could save them, he said out loud. And then he had an idea. He went into his barn, got one of his own geese, took it out, walked a big circle around behind where they were. Once he got out behind them, he turned his goose loose, and it flew right through the flock, right into the barn. And one by one, the geese followed that goose into the barn where there was food and shelter and safety. He stood silently for a moment and he got to thinking about what he had said. If only I were a goose, then I could save them. And then he thought about what he'd said to his wife earlier. Why would God want to lower himself to be like us? That's just ridiculous. And then suddenly, it all made sense. That's exactly what God had done. He had come to earth to save us as a man. We were like the geese, blind and lost and dying. But God made His Son to become like us so He could show us the way to safety, to life. Folks, that's the meaning. That's the meaning of Christmas, is God sent His Son to be a man. That's really what it means. And this man realized, as the wind blew and died down, the storm subsided, he got to thinking about it and wondering about it. And years of doubt and disbelief vanished like that passing storm. And he fell to his knees in the snow and he prayed his first prayer. Thank you, God, for coming in human form to get me out of the storm. My friends, that's exactly what God did for us when He sent His Son to die. He sent Him to this earth to be born as a human baby, to live a life as a human man, to show us the way to safety, to life. We would never follow otherwise. We were like those blind geese, and we wouldn't understand to follow. How could we understand? But Jesus showed us the way. And He's offering us life and salvation if we will follow Him. at home. Will you follow Jesus? He knows just what you need. He knows which way to take you. He knows how to get you home. Yes, He's lived the life that we live. But He knew all along who we were and what we needed. He just came to earth to show us the way so we could follow Him. If you're not a Christian, what better time than right now to surrender your life and your heart to Jesus? He is the Son of God, and He died to save you. And He lives now to come and take His people home one day. Will you surrender your life to Him? Do you believe He's the Son of God? Will you repent of sin? Confess your faith in Him and be baptized for forgiveness of sins. That's what the Lord commanded you to do if you want to be saved. If you want His blood to take your sins away. If you've already done that, but you've not been faithful to your Lord, if there's a way we can help you today to rededicate yourself to Him, without delay, we would encourage you to come right now as we stand and as we sing.